You can buy all of the cat beds in the world, but at the end of the day, they still want to sleep on the floor with their head on your shoe. And it's not even the shoe that I'm wearing. Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of Humans Are Worse. It's episode 10. Great start there, Jess. I want to start off by apologising for there not being an episode last week. I was sick as a dog, and you know it's serious considering I'm a cat person. But I have some announcements that will hopefully get me back in your good books. First of all, I finally set up a Facebook page! Woohoo! So you can now find us on Facebook at Humans Are Worse Podcast. Be sure to give that page a follow. It's mostly going to be everything that's normally on Instagram, but there might be some announcements on there, some little tidbits, some memes, probably a lot of memes, let's be honest. But that's not all. This week, it's my birthday. Okay, so technically when this episode comes out, it's already been my birthday, but we're just going to kind of shimmy past that fact for a moment. It's my birthday! We can all be happy and celebrate. 12th of the 12th was the day that I graced the earth with my presence. Everyone should rejoice. Oh god, this really is becoming a cult. But this year, I'm turning 24. Is that old? Is that young? It's all relative, I guess. But it got me thinking that I don't talk about myself a lot on this podcast, which is fine because I just want to talk about my cats. But I know that some of you would kind of like to get to know me a little bit better. So that's why I'm announcing that on the mighty fine Christmas Eve Eve, I will be doing my very first Instagram Live. And this is going to be a Q&A all about moi. Of course, the cats will probably be involved as well. Or they'll be asleep. They'll still be there. But you can catch me at 7 till 8 o'clock British Standard Time on Instagram at Humans Are Worse Podcast. You can send me an email or a DM, whichever you fancy, with any questions that you may have for me. Or you can just pop along and randomly start asking questions in the Instagram Live. Come and hang out. It'll be fun. So that's 7 p.m. British Standard Time on the 23rd of December. That's like, when does this come out? The 14th. That's next Tuesday. I know dates. But enough about me. I know what you really came here for. So if you don't follow the page on Instagram, you wouldn't have known that I was very, very ill last week. And that was the exact moment that I wish that cats had opposable thumbs and could look after me.
What? Am I not giving you attention?
In fact, while I was sat on the bathroom floor at 3 a.m, Clarice decided to run and jump into the toilet. Now, in my half awake, close to passing out state, I literally just grabbed her out, wrapped her in a towel, rubbed her a little, and let her wander. Ugh, my gosh, I can't speak. And let her wander away. But I actually forgot that this had even happened until the morning when my brain just told me, oh, Clarice is dry. And then I was like, wait, when was she wet? Oh, the toilet. To be fair, the cats have left me alone quite a lot this past week. I mean, I got a new computer and Norman has decided that his favourite place to lie is right above the keyboard with his chin on F10 and F11. Now it is really cute and it doesn't cause that much of an issue. What does cause an issue is when he decides he actually wants attention and he's just slamming his butt in my face because now he has a desk to sit on that is the exact right height. Yeah, so every so often it does get quite difficult to get stuff done. Now, when I was lying in bed ill with nothing to do, all I could really do was stare at the four walls around me. So I guess I just started staring at the cats. I mean, I know that's really sad, but oh my goodness, it gave me some laughs. I don't think I ever realised that cats could have so many different facial expressions, but something that I've definitely started to notice more is something that you might have noticed on some Instagram photos, actually. And it's that Clarice, her left eye actually angles slightly inwards. And it doesn't seem to be all of the time. I think it's mostly when she's playing and she's looking straight forward. It doesn't seem to impair her though, it just looks damn cute. Imagine if cats could have glasses though. But I'll tell you what isn't cute. What is, in fact, horrifying. Did you know that cats have two sets of eyelids? Yeah, I did. And I've had this experience with Norman before, where he's been asleep and he's kind of woken up, but his inner eyelids haven't opened fully. It looks really, really weird. But with Clarice, it doesn't just happen every so often. It's most of the time. It's actually brilliant when she's fighting sleep though, because her inner eyelids just start to close before her outer eyelids give way. But because her inner eyelids are kind of pink, it looks like she has mouths for eyes. Now I promise I haven't been drinking. I just can't fully get across how weird it looks. Let's just say I wouldn't be surprised if it turned up in a nightmare. But anyway, let's get on to why humans are worse. So it's 1990 in Dallas, Texas, and unintentionally, it's actually the 12th of December. Ooh, spooky. Now you're probably gonna think that I'm making that up, but honestly, I wish I was. I was really freaked out when I read this. Did not plan it at all. So, 12th of December, 1990. 33-year-old mother, Mary Pratt, was working as a sex worker on the streets of Oak Cliff, just as she always did. Why am I face to face with a cat right now? Norman, do you have anything interesting to say? Because if not, can you get down, please?
Don't use me to stretch.
Get down. Come on. Take your time. Got all the time in the world. Thank you. But in the early hours of the next day, her body was found. She was shot and her arms were draped over her head. But she was found in a residential area, partially naked, completely out in the open for anyone to stumble upon. And this was quite a distance away from the neighbourhood that she usually worked, as girls were known to stay within areas in which they knew people and they felt safe. Now, when police first found her body, unfortunately, they thought nothing of it. It wasn't unusual for sex workers to be killed. But during the autopsy, it was revealed that her eyeballs were missing. Now, this was done so well that they didn't even notice when the lids were closed. There were no cuts, no signs of interference at all. But this was obviously a huge red flag, which I feel like the whole dead thing should have been a red flag anyway. But this meant that they had a perpetrator who felt that simply killing wasn't enough to satisfy them, and they believed that this person would do it again. So the police started asking girls that were working the red light district, and everyone thought the same thing, that it had to be someone that she knew, someone that she trusted to go to a different area with. And the girls were trying to think of the worst clients that they had. And once these were revealed to the police, there was no one that really stood out. However, police did speak to one woman, Veronica Rodriguez, who had a gash on her throat and hand and said that she'd almost gotten killed and had to jump in a drainage pipe to get away from her attacker. Not only this, but she was actually with Mary at this time. I'm just going to hop back for a second. The first time I heard this, I thought it was a drain pipe. That woman was not that skinny, okay? It was a drainage pipe. One of those big things that goes in the ground. It's still pretty slim, but it's a bit more believable. Maybe I'm just an idiot. She said that on the night in question, her and Mary had been with a man with salt and pepper hair, and he'd attacked them, but she'd got away. She said she'd run barefoot through a field, partially naked, and she heard her attacker yelling her name behind her, but she managed to get to a person that she knew and was able to get to safety.
Now, a lot of the sex area... Oh, God, sex areas. A lot of the sex workers in this area were known for being addicted to cocaine.
The fact that Veronica may have been in a drug-induced state kind of put her story into doubt, so the police weren't really quite sure of what to make of it. It's raining so heavily outside. Let's just pretend it's ambiance, shall we? Try, at least. So the thing was that Veronica wasn't telling police who this man was that she knew that saved her. She wouldn't give his information. But 2 days later, they saw her again while checking out a suspicious truck that was parked up. And she was inside this truck with a man called Axton Schindler. Why did I have to think so hard about that? Axton Schindler. There we go. Of course, she's in the car doing business with this guy, kind of illegal, but she starts begging with the police, saying that this is the man that saved her. But he wouldn't verify this at the time. I doubt he was really saying much at the time, to be honest. Anything you say can and will be held against you, I guess. More fluffy cats, please. But he listed his address as in Oak Cliff, so it kind of checked out.
But when the police ran this address, they found it came up as a guy called Fred Albright, but he died a few years previous. The homeowner was actually his son, Charles, who was 57 years old at the time. So apart from being a bit shady, there was nothing really that the police could pin on Axton, so they let him go. Then, in February of 1991, the body of Suzanne Peterson was found, partially nude, shot, and her eyes had been removed. She was also found in the street, splayed out and posed, just like Mary before her. No matter if you agree with sex work or not, it's the police's job to keep everyone safe. So they put a warning out, stating that there may be a serial killer on the loose, and he had killed 2 Caucasian sex workers. But the girls needed to make a living somehow, so they kept going to the streets. But during this time, loads of people were getting in touch with leads, saying that it could be their boyfriend, their best friend, their ex-lover. But none of the leads gave anything solid. And it had become a media sensation, with the killer being dubbed the Texas Eyeball Killer. And the police were worried that with this being highly sensationalised, it would cause the killer to freak out and maybe change their MO. It is known that a killer may change their targets or methods based on the fact that they feel like the net is closing in. And this is exactly what happened. A month later, on March 19th, 1991, the body of Shirley Williams was found. She was an African-American sex worker and had perhaps not seen herself as a target. But that wasn't the only difference in this killing. It seemed to be a frenzied and even rush attack. There were wounds around her eyes, and a post-mortem actually found part of a blade stuck in one of these wounds. Not only were her eyes removed, but her face had been completely mutilated. She was completely nude, and her body was found near a school. She'd been shot not once, but several times. But the one thing that this murder did do is that it cleared the streets. The sex workers in the area were terrified, and no one felt safe.
Are you okay, darling? What's up, baby Clarice? Hey, darling. You okay? Turn up. Come on, then. Oh, ah!
Ah, that's nails. Thank you. Thank you for that. Cheers.
Police then spoke to one woman, Brenda White, who said that while working the streets, she was picked up by an older white male with salt and pepper hair, and he was driving a station wagon. He wanted to take her to a property, and she'd said no. These girls mostly just went to motels where they felt safe. But he got angry, and she actually had to mace him in order to get out of the car. But the thing that struck the police was that they'd heard this description before. An older white male with salt and pepper hair was the same guy that attacked Veronica Rodriguez. But it doesn't really narrow things down. But then they heard a name, Charles Albright. Many of the women that he bought services from said that he liked control. He would buy them drugs and say that he didn't want them out on the streets. But that he also had a dark side. He would gain their friendships and then tie them up, yell at them, and hit them just to get off. When police looked into him further, they discovered that he actually owned properties near to all of the body discovery sites. But wait, you've heard his name before, right? Charles Albright. That's because he was the landlord of the man that initially saved Veronica Rodriguez. And I wish I could say that there's some crazy connection, but it doesn't seem like there is. It's maybe just a coincidence. Charles Albright was adopted a few days after birth. His father was a grocer, but his mum was a stay-at-home mum. She was very much a helicopter parent. But she also had two sides. She was very loving and supportive, but she was also very strict and punished him for not following the rules. And by punishment, I mean she would tie him to the bed if he didn't take his nap. Jeez, I would never have to do that for Norman and Clarice. And they both actually shared a strange passion for taxidermy. They would work on dead animals together. And even though they weren't poor, she was very frugal. And instead of paying for the marble eyes, she would sew on buttons in their place. And because of this, the marble eyes were almost a forbidden fruit to Charles, and he would walk in the store just to run his hands through them. Bet that feels great, actually. But it's almost too coincidental. As a kid, he was really smart, but he'd get into trouble a lot at school. He was arrested at the age of 17 for breaking into a jewellery store and stealing a watch with his friends. But he skipped ahead in school and did really well in college. He dabbled in a lot of different jobs and even had a beautician's degree. But in 1969, he faked his qualifications and became head of biology at a high school. He also became active in a local Catholic church, and he was just an all-round great guy. But then, in 1981, he was accused of molesting a young girl who attended his church. And the family didn't want the girl to have to go through a whole court case, which is completely understandable. And he was able to take a plea bargain, which meant that he was placed on probation, and he was able to keep this quiet as not to damage his reputation. But up until this point, he was just into petty crime. So was there any other red flags? Well, of course there were. Apart from the fact that he's a sex offender, there was also this weird obsession with eyes. Well, when he was in college, his friend broke up with his girlfriend and ripped up the pictures that they had together. Charles actually snuck into his bedroom and cut out her eyes from all of these photos. He then waited a few months until this guy got a new girlfriend and then plastered these eyes over a picture of his new girlfriend and all over his bedroom, in the bathroom, so that everywhere he looked, he would see his ex-girlfriend staring at him. In adulthood, he also began painting, and he painted a portrait of a colleague's wife. He was taking months to do this, and when the colleague asked what was taking so long, he said that he only had one thing left to complete. the eyes. So this guy did have a child from a previous partner, but at the time of the murders, he was with a woman named Dixie. Now, she was the main breadwinner in the family. Girl power, good job. But this was because Charles' only line of income was from rental properties that were left to him by his parents. But while Dixie was at work, he would visit sex workers and bring them back to his rental houses. One of these women also stated that he once told her she has lovely eyes. I don't think I'm ever going to see that as a compliment again. Oh, see. Oh, jeez. Charles was also part of a senior softball team. And one day, a guy in the team made a comment about two girls that were driving past being sex workers. And out of nowhere, Charles said that he'd kill them all if he had the choice. So Charles was eventually arrested by the tactical team that had surrounded his house in the early hours of the morning. In his house, they didn't actually find much, but there was a fireplace with a secret cover which hid a number of guns, but none of these were connected to the crimes. They also found a number of blades, but they couldn't be connected either. It also turns out that one of the forensic scientists that worked on this case and searched his property was actually on his softball team. That's a lovely little claim to fame. The police began searching other rental properties that belonged to Charles, and they didn't find much, but they did find a barn, and in it there were jars of pickled animals. So, snakes, newts, and even pig eyes. Yeah, they were tested. They were just pig eyes. Sorry to disappoint. However, what they did find was that coloured condoms matching those found at Shirley's discovery site were also found in Charles' house. At the crime scene, they had actually found a raincoat belonging to Shirley Williams, and on it there was a hair that they couldn't identify, but they actually found the same type of hair in Charles's vacuum cleaner. Now here's where the evidence gets a bit sketchy. So they actually took this hair to the zoo and they identified it as a squirrel hair. Now, I can't say anything about the US, but I know that in the UK, squirrels aren't that uncommon. But I guess the way that they linked this was through his taxidermy and the fact that he probably had stuffed squirrels at his address. And during the trial, he stated that he didn't even visit the red light district and he didn't know these women. The police believed that because he was adopted, he maybe thought that his birth mother was a sex worker. And this idea had just festered over the years into a kind of resentment and really an obsession. He was found guilty of the murder of Shirley Williams, but there was no evidence to link him to the other two murders, even though these were referenced at trial. He received a sentence of 5 years to life, and in 1994 it was appealed, but the verdict was upheld. But to this day he still says he's innocent. Wouldn't it be great if people just told the truth and then we'd know whether we got it right or wrong? So yes, a lot of the evidence is circumstantial. Well, in fact, all of the evidence is circumstantial. There were also some hairs found at various crime scenes matching the victim and the suspects, but none of this was proven through DNA, so I'm not going to get onto the technicalities of that. You're probably sick of me. Hey, you. Going up? Hey, baby. But now he lives his life out in jail and enjoys drawing pictures of eyes, which he has taped all over the walls of his cell. Just make of that what you will. Clarice may have really weird eyes, but at least they're still in her head. Guess that's another reason why humans are worse. Want to prove me wrong? Let me know what kind of crimes your furry fiend is committing by sending an email. You can also send in your own true crime short stories and ideas for me to fact check on the show. Just send an email to humansareworse@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Humans Are Worse Podcast.